Hello, and welcome to the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Yes, it's me, Ray Tempesta, the host of the aforesaid East Anglian Theatre Podcast, back once again to soil the airwaves with my dreadful play acting at being some kind of journalistic figure in your local theatre scene. For those who haven't listened before, well, I'm sorry for my presence, but not sorry about what the podcast is trying to achieve. It's here to promote the theatre that's happening on our respective doorsteps across East Anglia. There's so much quality in our local theatres, and yes, the West End is always there and shouldn't be ignored, but you don't need to spend a fortune to see some great productions. The way the podcast works is simple, which is a relief because I am merely a simple guy. It's split into three parts. Part one is where I tell you a bit about what I've been up to in the world of theatre. Part two is what you're really here for, the main feature, the pièce de résistance, the interview. And we wrap it up with the third part where I let you know about some of the upcoming shows and the occasional audition opportunity in the region. That's all coming up, of course, but first let me tell you about the podcast social media stuff. I have a half-assed presence on most platforms, i.e. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whilst it lasts, but as yet not Threads. If you're on any of those platforms, do consider giving the pages a like, a follow, a share, or whatever. I'm not sure what good it does, but other people, far more successful than me, promote their stuff that way, so it seems like an advisable thing to do. There's also a website for the podcast, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all episodes of the podcast, plus written versions of the reviews that I produce, and a page to contact me if you want to be featured on the podcast, or simply want to congratulate me for being so charismatic and handsome. Granted, you can't see me, but I have been told by at least two people that aren't my mum that I'm alright to look at. Anyway, enough of my nonsense, here's section one, and in the absence of those who give a shit enough to ask me, I rather pathetically resort to asking myself, Ray, what have you been up to theatre-wise lately? Well, it's no secret I've been a pretty busy lad lately, with the big crescendo in my hectic schedule coming with a week-long run of the Welkin at the Sewell Barn in Norwich. Now, after having our planned run cancelled after just two performances in October last year, we were very excited to get back into it after an eight-month gap. We crammed in little over 2 weeks of rehearsals and then performed to largely packed houses, and the reviews we received as a company were just fantastic. We knew it was a special show, all of us in the cast and crew were great fans of the script by Lucy Kirkwood, and we knew we could trust in the material, but actually, I think we were also blessed with the brilliant collective creative minds of our original director, Jez Pike, who was largely responsible for how the show looked, a lot of our characterisations, and helping us to realise nuances in our characters. Jez, unfortunately, wasn't able to be involved in the rescheduled performances, but thankfully, we had the quietly skillful presence of John Holden to guide us, who was able to retain the integrity of the piece that Jez had created, but still able to fine-tune some elements in a short space of time that really brought an extra dimension to the show that we'd produced back in October 2022. Now, fellow cast member and co-artistic director at the Sewell Barn, Sabrina Poole, stepped up from her role within the production to take on some of the directorial responsibility and a huge chunk of the technical side of things, and what a fantastic job she did. And as for the cast, well, I truly cannot recall having worked alongside such a strong ensemble. If you can't pick out a weak link among your fellow cast, then either you're onto a good thing or you're the one that's the weak link. Now I'm hoping it's the former rather than the latter. If you did come along, then thank you for your support, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as we on the production did. Anyway, having navigated the run and now cleared my schedule somewhat, I'm looking forward to a little free time. Heaven knows what I'll do with it. I have got another couple of shows in the pipeline, of course, a couple of summer Shakespeare performances as part of the Heritage Open days, and then in the autumn, a production of Alan Ayckbourn's Season's Greetings at Sheringham Little Theatre, but I'll talk more about those at a later date. Okay, so that's section one safely navigated, and on to section two, the interview. And this time, I'd like to introduce you to someone who is combining his performance skills with his work for a men's mental health charity. His name is Tom Bailey, and he's set to perform a one-man show called Three Kings at the Madder Market later this month with the newly formed Man Alive Theatre. So, without further ado, let's have a chat with him, shall we? Hi Hi there, Tom. It's lovely to speak with you. Now, this isn't just a straight chat about the play that you're performing in, really. And to my mind, there's a few things to unpick here. So before we talk about the show that you're in at the end of the month, Three Kings, could you tell us about the company Man Alive Theatre, under whose name you're performing the piece?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So Man Alive Theatre is a new company being set up this year. It was co-founded between myself and two other colleagues, a chap called Andy Wood and another chap called Mark Brown. They were both one of the few co-founders of Men's Craft back in the day. So we've set up Man Alive Theatre. It's a theatre company which specifically focuses on men. So all of our participants or our cast members or our volunteers are male or male identifying. Because it really focuses on, we have had women come in and be involved as well. But the focus of the sort of the drama or what we're looking at are issues faced by men, sort of contemporary man, masculinity, toxic masculinity, self-expression, and so on. So Man Alive Theatre really is an evolution or an offshoot of something else which Andy and I have been running for a few years now in conjunction with Men's Craft, which is a Norwich-based charity, and they're now based at the Madden Market Theatre. So we were doing workshops, weekly workshops on a Sunday with Men's Craft about men's issues and for men. And sort of Man Alive really is sort of the next step, really, so we can try and get more of the same good work and try and get it further afield, out into the county, basically, more Norfolk-wide. And beyond, hopefully. So that's why Man Alive came about, is really to kind of try and be the next step of that male-focused theatre work, really, and opening up those discussions, really, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so presumably if you're opening up a new avenue for this, there's an appetite for it.
I think so, yeah. I think we've definitely felt that there's a need for it, and that the men that do either stumble across us or get invited to come along really do benefit from that kind of expression and to talk about issues which they're facing, whether it be emotional, psychological, sort of society. Yeah, and we do often, there's often when in the city in Norwich, when there's a wellbeing event or a community event, say at the Forum or similar sort of areas, and we have a little pitch there or we go and do something there, some drama, we kind of feature as part of their programme. It definitely does still get a buzz around men's health and sort of men's development. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's that kind of thing, really.
And what was the catalyst for you getting involved in the organisation initially?
Men's Craft or the men's theatre group?
Well, I suppose both, really. You can answer that in two parts, if you like.
Yeah. So I, for a long time, since university, I had struggled with some mental health issues myself. I had a bit of a breakdown at uni, and that caused me to have some sort of issues with depression and anxiety. And maybe I found that I possibly, as a man, wasn't too sure about how to process those. I think whether who I could talk to or should I be talking? Should I just get on with it? And that kind of thing. And, they were quite toxic sort of thoughts to have. I then came to Men's Craft because I wanted to champion their kind of ethos of positive masculinity. And funny enough, with Andy, I met him at Norwich Prison. And it's not, it makes it always seem like it was some sort of porridge, like the TV show Porridge set up. But we met doing some training, which was action-based group therapy. And it was a Canadian initiative, which came over to look at through drama and kind of like a drama therapy, sort of letting sort of servicemen, people who had been sort of in the army and other forces, how they can, through drama, process trauma through the body. And Andy and I met on that. And then we kind of struck up a friendship. He trained as a drama therapist. I trained as a theatre director and an actor. And we kind of came together. And that's kind of how we wanted to kind of carry on that kind of work. In drama and self-expression. So it's not clinical. So you're not coming in and it's not a form of therapy, but it can be therapeutic. That's what we say. So it's not clinical therapy. Don't feel that, this is going to sort of change everything, but it can maybe help along the way. So, And we're both big advocates of arts, the arts and drama, being really good ways of processing, discussing, and sort of sorting all of that stuff out in, you know, that either mental health or any problems you've got through reenactment actually helps you kind of process and get to grips maybe with all of that kind of stuff. So that's basically where it came from, really. Yeah, and we've had a wide variety of different people come and sort of come and be part of the workshops and really get something from it, because they're there from the devising, so I suppose from the debate and discussion stage, then the devising, then the writing, then the performing. It really is a personal, a personal journey for them. Oh, I used the horrid J word, the journey. But it is I hate that. Oh, let's go. Oh, what journey did you take? But it is that kind of, because, and a lot of their own personal stuff goes into the story and the characters and so on. One of the plays we did, one of the guys that wrote a particular character in one of the plays, I then ended up playing because he was unavailable for the show or a lot of rehearsals leading up. But then him watching me sort of play him in the play actually was therapeutic then for himself, really. Hmm. So it's a wonderful thing. And
yeah, it sounds like it's creating some unique experiences, really.
Yeah. And then we usually have a Q&A afterwards, which then really opens up some really exciting sort of discussions and debates, really. Yeah.
Hmm. And I suppose obviously we're really here to talk about Three Kings. Now, I know it was written in 2020 for Andrew Scott to perform, but having not seen it, I know precious little else about it. So for my benefit, as much as for the listeners, could you explain what it's about?
Yeah, you're right. It was written in lockdown for Andrew Scott, so I don't know why I thought I could take it on after after him, because he's an amazing actor. Yeah, so Three Kings, it's written in three sections. It's basically one long monologue, similar to Alan Bennett's Talking Heads, if anyone's familiar with that format. And a bit like, I always liken it as well to Fleabag, before it went and became the television version that we know. Phoebe Waller-Bridge had it as a one-woman show where she sort of, it was no set basically, apart from her on a chair. And that's, so that's the layout of Three Kings. What it's about and why it kind of, I hope you can see when I explain the sort of what it's about, how it ties in with our work, is, so I play a character called Patrick. He's an Irish gentleman who lives with his mother and sister. He doesn't meet his estranged father until he's 8 years old. That encounter, which is sort of performed in the first section of the play, is a very odd encounter in the sense of his father's quite an overbearing, quite a toxic gentleman. And he tries to teach Patrick, so the Three Kings of the title refers to a pub trick, which includes £3 coins. And his father kind of gives him the challenge of working out this pub trick called the Three Kings. And you have to get the first king in between the second and third, but there's certain rules which you can touch one, but you can't move the other. From that experience, and then he goes, then he disappears out of Patrick's life again. He says, don't contact me again until you figure out the trick. His father is a bit of a Lothario. He's a bit of a womanizer. He's a bit of a Walter Mitty. He's a bit of a Del Boy. He's always got a scheme going on. He hasn't really got time for Patrick. Then it moves forward until Patrick's 16 and he contacts his father. He doesn't want anything to know with him. And then the rest of the play, kind of the father passes away at one point, and it's not until the father passes away that Patrick kind of, why his father is the way he is, Patrick sort of finds out, it kind of unravels why he is the way he is. But you see throughout the play that how his father is with him and his relationship with his father, or not his relationship with his father, how that's had a knock-on effect on Patrick as a man. He becomes an alcoholic, not saying that everybody with poor fathers do that, but he becomes reckless with money, emotionally unavailable. He's not very nice. I think in rehearsals, I said to the director the other day, I said, I'm not getting this bit because I think I'm playing him too much like a hero, like he's too much of a pure character, when actually he's messed up. And he's actually Patrick, who I play. You do endear yourself to him, but he's not a great man. He's not perfect. But then you meet other characters that knew the father. So really it ties into masculinity, definitely fathers and sons, So yeah, that's,
it makes perfect sense why you've chosen that piece. I mean, what do you hope or think your audiences might take from the piece?
I hope that they, that's a good question. What I hope that they get when they watch this is how toxic masculinity or men that are struggling and don't seek help, how actually their actions can affect future generations. So in within, if that makes sense, within the play, how the father is has a knock on effect to Patrick, my character. And then it also has a knock on effect on how Patrick works in the world and how he treats other people. Maybe it's showing examples of where this goes wrong and actually where what needs to change or what how we need to look at examples of positive masculinity. And also, because I know Men's Craft does a lot of good work or are looking to do a lot of good work with fathers. So this ties into that conversation as well. And hopefully with the Q&A afterwards, a discussion can come about relating two things in the play, sort of can open up discussion about positive masculinity. Because I know Men's Craft are doing a project towards the end of the year, which they've started now, but it'll, the main bulk of it will be at the end of the year, about what makes a good man.
Okay.
So hopefully it will tie in with that as well.
So just to clarify, that there's a Q&A after the two performances on the, is it 27th and 28th of July?
Yeah, so Thursday the 27th of July and Friday the 28th of July at 7:30. Show's about an hour, and then there'll be, I'm sure there'll be a little recess or interval, and then there'll be a little Q&A afterwards. Just okay. Because I think the question that the show chucks up so many things about fathers and masculinity and sort of how the Patrick's father kind of stunts his sort of development and mental health and so on, that I think we need to let people suddenly maybe sort of feed back or air some of the things that they might be affected by.
It might seem a stupid question because you've got the Q&A that's oriented towards men, but presumably that there's plenty that women can get from the production too.
Crikey. Most definitely, I definitely think, and we encourage, we don't want it to just be men having those conversations. It is very important that women and other gender identities are in the mix there, because we all live within the same sort of societies and communities in this country. And obviously, looking at male sort of mental health, we definitely think that everybody should be having those conversations, definitely. Yeah. Mm.
And just moving on, actually, in practical terms, you mentioned about the show being about an hour in length. Now, I've delivered monologues before, but never an hour long one. So in terms of rehearsing or preparing for such a lengthy solo piece, I mean, how have you gone about it and how have you found it?
It's been difficult. I've done probably a monologue. The longest one was 20 minutes. This lasts about an hour. It's hard. I think I definitely work better that if I learn something after I've rehearsed it, if that makes sense. So it's not just cold text. I have a more of a journey. Yeah, I've got a couple of friends who've done one man shows before, and this is my first. Yeah, I think this would have been my first one man show actually. So it is new ground. If I'm honest, I've just kind of gone page one. And let's start learning it and gone through it. So it's not been much more exciting than that. Because I did ask, as I said, a couple of friends had done one-man shows. And I said, what are the hints and tips? And they went, it might just be just sitting with page one. Luckily, I spent a lot of today actually going through it. It's surprising how, once you start kind of blowing the dust off those mechanics and doing it more often, it's a weird kind of, the more you do it, like an exercise, the better you get at it. And because it's only me, I haven't really got to rely on anybody else's cues. I can just sort of go on my own little way with it. It's hard, though, when sometimes the character jumps to something that's not connected necessarily to what you've been speaking about. And that's the little gap. But, yeah, I've so far, touch wood, it's been quite okay trying to learn it. It's definitely, and then trying to learn other things. I've got two other shows that I'm trying to put in my head at the moment as well. It was one of those things that when I got asked to do it by Andy and Mark, I went, that'd be fine. It's not that long. It's only 54 pages. But I suppose the more you rehearse it and the more you break it down, it just does become clearer. And it is in three sections as well. So I kind of bulked it like that. really. Yeah.
I suppose I should ask you about the other two things you've got in your mind at the moment as well.
Oh, right. That sounds like I prompted you for a plug then, wasn't it? So, one is, it sounds really self-indulgent now. It is another one-man show, but this one doesn't have any lines to learn. It's a theatre clowning piece that I'm doing called Manchild, which is about a man pushing 40, which I am, stuck in his flat. And it's that, just by pure coincidence, is also about men at a particular time in life, but it's all done through kind of slapstick and silent comedy. So the whole thing will be scored with music and sound effects. I've billed it as a multimedia clowning show, which sounds really pretentious when you say it out loud, but that's pretty much what it is. That will be at the Seagull Theatre on the 2nd of September. I kind of give myself a challenge because I did a lot of theatre clowning and comedy performance at uni.
Okay.
And that kind of sparked my interest in that. And I'd never really done anything with it. And then I just thought, oh, why don't you just book a slot at the Seagull Theatre and kind of just do it? And it'll only be about an hour long as well.
Is that under any particular umbrella in terms of...
No, that's me. Just yourself. Just me. Yeah, Tom Bailey. Yeah, just me.
Just you clowning around for an hour.
Yeah, I ain't got to let anyone down then, apart from myself. And then the other one is Jerry Springer the Opera, which will be
Sound Ideas.
Yeah, Sound Ideas, which is my first thing that I've ever done with Sound Ideas, and I'm really enjoying it because I suppose they more often than not do musicals, and I'm not a singer and I can't sing. I know that sounds self-deprecating, and people will say, "Oh no, I'm sure you can." I can't. And the only way that I've got into a Sound Ideas show is because, so I'm playing Jerry Springer, I'm playing him, and he doesn't sing in the show. He's the only character, because all the other characters sing all the way through, and Jerry doesn't. Jerry doesn't sing at all. He's just, he speaks through it. So Jerry Springer, the Opera, which is at Norwich Playhouse on the 5th to the 10th of September.
And just moving on to your own kind of background in theatre, you've hinted at it a couple of times, obviously having gone to uni and done trained as a theatre director and done the clowning work. But what was the catalyst for you getting into theatre in the first place?
It was definitely middle school, or what they call primary now. I think there was a drama, they just did a drama class after school. And I remember it was a lady, probably this is a cliche, everyone says this, but I had a drama teacher called Mrs. Humphreys, and she used to come in with a Les Mis t-shirt, and I had no idea what it was. The little Cosette girl with the flag, and I thought, what on earth is that she's wearing? And I was sort of intrigued. I didn't know what it was, but I was intrigued. And anyway, we did drama, and then I found that I think I was bitten more by the ability to, I thought, oh, I could be funny. And then that was a bit of a drug. That was a bit of an addiction, that I had the ability to, oh, what I've just said or done has got laughter. And I think that was the first kind of incentive, because I didn't know I was funny. I was just thought, oh, I could be funny. I thought I was a dramatic actor, but then I probably have funny bones, I suppose. Yeah, and then went from there. And then towards the end of high school, I did a local production of South Pacific, and kind of went from there with college and then uni for drama degree and UEA for theatre direction, and then it went from there, really.
And so in your time on stage and off stage as well with the direction side of things, is there any particular highlight or thing that sticks out most from your time?
I would say highlight was production of Midsummer Night's Dream that I directed and was in with a group a couple of summers ago in 2021. So it was the first summer that we were a bit more sort of free after lockdown and COVID and everything. And we did a little summer tour around East Anglia, and we went to we were one of the first groups or companies to go to the Thorington Theatre down in Suffolk. Yeah, at Saxmundham Way. And we had full houses there. And I think it just was one of those performances where we were ready to perform again, I suppose, after lockdown. And the audience there with their hampers and their pop and everything, and they were really eager for some entertainment. And it was just a really joyous, kind of enjoyable production. And we got lots of laughter and lots of great feedback. And it's one of the highlights I had, just because I suppose we were back doing it and I was with friends, and it was a really good show in a nice setting. So, yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah. And inevitably, I'm going to ask you about low points as well.
Well, I played a cow once in Animal Farm. That might have been a low point. And then, but I know that definitely one of my, and it probably is probably is not a good advert for Three Kings and me being on my own. But I did a tour around East Anglia. There's a series of monologues that the BBC commissioned a few years ago to mark the end of, to mark decriminalisation of homosexuality in Britain. It was called Queers. I think actually Sewell Barn
did that earlier on this year.
Yes, anyway, so we did those monologues when they became available, and we did a little tour around, and we went to one of the actors who was doing one of the monologues. It was a 20-minute monologue about a man getting married on his wedding day, and sort of talking about how far, you know, LGBT has come in some respects. An actor couldn't do it, so I said, "Oh, I'll step in," and I learned this, and I don't know why. So I went on stage. I couldn't see any of the audience. The lighting was right on me, and about halfway through, I blanked, and I dried, and I, which is a great advert, isn't it, for Three Kings? But this was a long time ago. I'm much better now, I hope. But I remember sweating profusely, and then I, instead of trying to get it back, I remember running off the stage. And then it was at Sheringham Little Theatre, and you can hear someone if they run heavily enough up the side stairs, and they said they could hear over my mic, "It's gone wrong. Just go on and back." So yeah, that's I would say that was probably my lowest point. Yeah.
Well, I'm pleased you shared it with us. I mean, it's a great story. Yeah.
So please come see Three Kings, see if I come and do the same thing. Will he get all the way through to the end this time?
Who knows? And looking to the future, going back to Man Alive Theatre, what is the plan for the company, and what's next for them as well beyond Three Kings?
Yeah, so we're in early talks at the moment because we're kind of in partnership with Men's Craft, with Man Alive, you know, them sort of supporting us and sort of working in collaboration with them as much as possible. We're hoping to produce a small piece of theatre for autumn this year to do with their, I don't know if this is the official sort of name for it, but we're calling it, or in discussions, it's been called the Postcard Project. Men's Crafter, you can fill out a postcard, what makes a good man, you pop your ideas or opinions on the back, and then that will go into a Men's Crafter doing an exhibition of those postcards, but that will also go with a talk and a bit of a conference. And then we will then, using those postcards as source material, make a piece of theatre, and that will sort of accompany that kind of project that they're doing. And past that, at the moment, we haven't got anything kind of set, but I suppose we'd like to apply for funding and just see what stories are out there that we can tell. We've always wanted to do something using verbatim theatre. You know, Andy likes theatre of the self-expression, quite into kind of theatre workshop, Joan Littlewood kind of documentary kind of theatre. That would be good. Just stuff that hopefully next year and beyond that reaches as many men as possible and kind of carries on the good work, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And just finally, really for clarity, when is Three Kings on, and where can we get tickets?
Yes, certainly. So Three Kings is being performed at the Madam Market Theatre on the 27th and the 28th of July, both 7:30 p.m. performance times. And you can go and book tickets at the Madam Market Theatre when their box office is open, or by visiting their website.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your time, Tom. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you ever so much. Yeah,
So there we have it. That was Tom Bailey of Man Alive Theatre. Now, if you'd like to watch him in action, you can do so at the Madam Market in Norwich on the 27th and 28th of July. Tickets for that are available via madammarket.co.uk. And if you'd like to learn more about the parent company, if you will, of Man Alive Theatre, the Norwich-based charity called Men's Craft, you can visit their website menscraft.org.uk, where you can also reach out for support. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next few weeks? Well, in North Norfolk, Red Loft Theatre Company is on the lookout for auditionees for their teen edition of Chicago. So they're on the hunt for performers aged 13 to 19. The shows are set to take place on the 27th to the 29th of October, and there's auditions taking place on the 2nd of August, with callbacks the following day. They'll be held at North Walsham Community Centre, and you can book a place by emailing info@redlofttheatre.com.
In Suffolk, there's further audition opportunities available as Beccles Public Hall and Theatre go in search of adult performers to be involved in their late October / early November production of Wizard of Oz. The auditions are set to take place on the 30th of July at the Public Hall, and you can register for an audition spot via their website, beccles.publichall.co.uk. In terms of shows coming up, I guess I probably should mention the Cemetery Club at the Sewell Barn Theatre, not least because the director of that show kindly agreed to move their slot in order to fit in some rescheduled performances of the Welkin. Now, the Cemetery Club is written by Ivan Menchel and concerns three Jewish widows who meet once a month before going to visit their husbands' graves. On one occasion at the cemetery, they bump into their butcher, who is visiting his deceased wife's grave, and from there a new friendship blossoms and drama follows. The Cemetery Club is on from the 3rd to the 5th and then the 9th to the 12th of August at Sewell Barn in Norwich. Tickets for that can be purchased via sewellbarn.org. Touring at venues across the region is Quill and Inkling Theatre Company with their original adaptation of the classic novel Don Quixote. They open their tour at Whitlingham Country Park on the 29th of July before playing at the Plantation Garden in Norwich the following day. Then they cross the border into Suffolk as they head to St Mary's Church in Sudbury on the 4th of August, before heading to another couple of churches, St Mary the Virgin in Dunstable on the 9th of August and St Michael's Church in Cambridge on the 10th. After that they play a couple of dates in Devonshire, so I won't mention those, before closing out the tour back in Norfolk at the Deerham Windmill on the 20th of August. For all ticket info you can click the link on their website, quillandinkling.com. Also touring the region is Strange Fascination Theatre, with their original adaptation of Lewis Carroll's Alice Through the Looking Glass. Their tour begins at Catton Park in Norwich on the 22nd of July. They then head to the North Norfolk coast as they play at Holcombe Hall near Wells on the 26th of July, and then North Lodge Park in Cromer on the 30th. On the 5th of August, they're back in Norwich at the Plantation Garden, and then at Hoveton Hall Gardens the following day. The tour then heads to Suffolk as they play at Thorington Theatre on the 15th of August and then at Carlton Marshes Nature Reserve in Lowestoft on the 19th of August. Finally, the tour concludes at North Walsham Memorial Park on the 25th of August. Now, you can find tickets for most of the venues at ticketsource.co.uk, but the Holcombe Hall and Thorington Theatre shows must be booked via the venue, and the final show in North Walsham via newstages.co.uk. Okay, phew. Take a breath. And that, folks, is all I have time for. As usual, I'll post links for all the shows and auditions mentioned on my social media pages, as well as some others I've not had time to feature. Thanks so much for listening to me and Tom ramble on, and tune in again soon for what will no doubt be another rip-roaring ride behind the scenes at a venue near you. God, I sound sarcastic. Until then, take care of yourselves, and go watch some theatre. Bye.